we think of investing as something that people do that have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I want people to know that you don't have to have a lot of money to invest, right? And if you, even if you don't want to get into real estate and you don't want to like have rentals or anything like that, and you want to be a private lender and make money on your money, you can also do that, mm-hmm. right? So for me, the motivating factor is really getting the word out that you can make money on your money. Yeah. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real, real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Season 4, Episode 6. We're going to be talking micro-investing with Shalon Prasad Carey, who is here from out of town to join us in our Under All is the Land studios. We're very excited to have her. I'm your host, Courtney Polis, the hostess with the mostess, here with my sister, Dominique Madden.
Hi.
We're missing our third wheel. Silka is under the weather today, unfortunately. But we've got Shalon as a guest host. We're very excited. It's our first time having a guest host.
Yeah, our first one.
I know.
And a great one to have.
Yeah, and such a great one to have. So let me just tell you, I have been on a mission for years to figure out how to take small amounts of money and make the money work. You know, I think that there's this, I think just we're taught somehow that investing is for rich people. You know, we see investment accounts and it always looks like, oh, you have to have $50,000 minimum or $25,000, which feels like a lot of money when you're like 24 years old or something. You know, it's impossible, but you don't hear a lot about people taking $5,000 and even turning it into $8,000 or, you know, making $10,000 investments. So when I met Shalon, we were at Landmark Forum many years ago, different world, different lifetime, but I knew she had something very special about her. And over the years, we've kept in touch and I've watched her build an extraordinary investment firm just for people who can, you know, who can invest at all price points. So I'm loving that she's going to share her story with us. Do you own investment property, Neek?
You know what? I own properties, but they're not acting as investments right now.
They're not, right?
I mean, tax write-offs in ways, but yeah. Not investments per se.
Right.
You know, occupied by myself and family right now.
Right. Okay.
Do you?
I do, and I have done. I own a cabin in Big Bear, which I have since sold. I own a duplex. I own a commercial mixed-use space. And then, you know, I own, yeah. So yes, I do. They're property earners. But earlier this week, we had a call with Sarah Weaver, who wrote the book Medium Term Rental, 30 Day Stay, Medium Term Rental. And it's on Amazon. We'll put the link in the show notes. But I'm so excited about her presentation because it's really about thinking outside the box in terms of location. And it had me feeling like I need to be buying something right now, wherever. Like, I think her hotspots are like Illinois, Indiana.
St. Louis.
Yeah, St. Louis was one of her things. So that's Shalon's area too. So I have to say, this investment idea has been all over us this week. So that's why I'm really, really glad that we have somebody who can break it down.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? So Nico's calculated with a high income interest rate what $1,000 invested in 1977 would have turned into if you just let it sit there untouched, you know, adding interest, growing. And it wasn't like super impressive. It was like $6,800 or something with a 5% average. And, you know, interest rates have gone up and down since the 70s, but that was like the average. But it's like, what happens, like, where is it best to put your small amounts of money? Is it a high yield savings account? You know, their interest rates are at like 5% right now too. Or is it into some project that in 5 to 7 years is going to appreciate, and maybe you don't have the money to put it in a syndicate, so you can find a place to put it where you know you're going to get appreciation on top of interest and dividends and that kind of thing.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How else can you create multiple revenue streams with small amounts of money?
You know, these days people have many more options, I'd say, like in how to invest, because there are a lot of platforms where it's like you can put, you know, little pieces towards something like $500.
Have you seen?
I don't know what you actually make off of that.
Yeah. Though. There's an Instagram one that I keep seeing pop up in my algorithm that's like, you don't need to do anything. Just give us your money and you're part of a short-term rental investment portfolio.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I have seen that.
What is it called?
I couldn't remember. I can't remember.
Oh, my God. And then I saw something that I thought was so ridiculously controversial from Mashvisor. Have you heard of Mashvisor?
Yeah.
So they sent an email to me yesterday saying, learn how you can take, like, make money without buying the property by doing short-term rentals on your leases.
Yeah.
I'm like,
you know what?
That seems like it would be against the law.
That is a tactic. But you know what? What they encourage, if you're going to go that route, is actually having an agreement with your landlord that is how you're going
to
operate it.
You'd have to.
I mean, I'm sure there are people who don't and who are just doing it, you know, but like there's actually a business model that people have where they will like do this on like on a wide scale, like in cities they don't live in, whatever. They'll like reach out to landlords whose properties have been sitting for a while. And they'll say, look, I will rent your property, you know, but this is what my intention is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll do this, this, and that, da, 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 whatever.
Right, I'll stage it, I'll do whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, and there are some people who see success off of it. Seems risky.
Seems risky to me.
I mean, if I was a landlord, I think it'd feel risky. But then if you're a landlord who knows nothing about how to monetize it that way, you know what I mean? But you have someone who's telling you that they're going to be a consistent renter,
right,
or may carry insurance, whatever, then that could be an attractive option for you if no one else is biting on it.
Well,
versus
to that end, I have a listing that is not totally live yet. It's kind of a coming soon, but we are willing to accept inquiries at the moment. In Woodland Hills with a designer who turned his house renovation into like basically a set for Pier Space. So him and his family are expanding and they're moving from there, and they want to rent it potentially to someone who would be a renter but also be a profit sharer in the, you know, in the peer spacing, which is the first time I've ever heard of anybody offering a lease that way. It's interesting, but
I wish
that would have been around when I was renting.
Yeah.
Like making money off your rental, like I hadn't even thought of it, but I bet people totally abuse that system all the time. To me,
I'm
that
sure.
feels very unsafe.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's probably abuse in like every system. I mean,
probably,
people that wiggle
but,
their way
you
in.
Know, I mean, I know in our leases, I think in our standard leases, it says you can't use it for any purpose other than the intended use. But how do you track that? You know, it's like I'd have to be a troll on Airbnb to try and see if somebody's putting
right.
my property up. I don't know.
Right.
Just seems like more trouble than it's worth. I'd rather buy something is my point.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
I mean, stealing seems like it's more trouble than it's worth.
But it's true. Well, with that said, let's bring on Shalon. Shalon, welcome to Under All is the Land.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Where did you fly in from?
St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, Missouri. What's going on in St. Louis, Missouri?
Well, I used to live in Southern California, as you know, and the market out here was too expensive for me to get into as an investor. And so I started exploring what it would be like to invest out of state. And I started investing out of state and met someone who is also in the real estate industry. And he was actually supposed to help me find additional rentals in St. Louis.
Instead,
I found myself a husband.
I'd say that's a long-term investment. So you found yourself a husband. Well, let's start at the beginning of this all. So you and I met at Landmark, and we connected on Facebook.
Yes.
And then how long after that did you, like, what year is this that you decided to start pursuing these out-of-state investment opportunities?
So I bought my first one in 2017. So
okay.
It was like July 2017. I've always wanted to like invest in real estate.
Right.
Right. But the thought in my mind was save up money and have a down payment, start with a condo and kind of work my way up, right? Slowly but surely. And then I knew, I was just going to make a couple hundred dollars a month. And then I would just kind of like slowly grow my portfolio. And that was sort of the plan because I didn't see anything outside of Southern California. It was just, this is where I am.
Right, and I think people feel like that in any urban market that has high prices, right? DC feels like that, New York feels like that, Miami feels like that. It just feels like that when you realize the people who are actually buying real estate in these cities have a little bit more experience, or yeah, they bought a long time ago, so their properties are appreciating. They might not even be able to rebuy that now, you right, know, like if they had to. So I think that's everybody in an urban market. A lot of professional women, for example, like turn to rentals because they don't feel like they make enough to buy what right, they want.
Right. And so, and I also didn't think of it like as a business necessarily, right? I was like, I have my career. I'm just going to have this passive income on the side and just kind of grow my portfolio very slowly because I thought that that was the only option.
And what was your career before?
So my background is in process improvement, consulting, project management, change management. So a lot of just corporate.
Those are words. Those are a lot of words. Do you know what that means?
I'd like to guess.
Yeah. What is process improvement?
Process improvement? Are you improving people's processes?
Yes. And making them more efficient? Yes.
Like for, like a corporation would hire somebody to evaluate like how what their systems are in each department and you like improve their systems?
Yeah. So my background was actually in healthcare specifically, right? Okay. So I have a master's in healthcare administration. So I worked in like clinics and hospitals and health insurance companies and just evaluate their process, kind of see where the gaps are, improve them, and then okay, also not just working on the processes but also the people that work in the processes to make sure that they have transitioned in the change well. Mm-hmm. So not just the processes but also the people,
you know, that sounds like it would be really useful actually for what it is you ended up doing, because real estate has a lot of, in order to get the true value of a real estate investment, you do have to change it, you do have to see what's working, what's not working, and improve it, right? Right? So 2017, you're thinking you want to buy something. You're like frustrated with the prices in Southern California. And so.
So it was kind of two things going on at one time. So I always wanted to invest, but I also am like very passionate about just like being very financially stable, having a great credit score and a lot of available credit and things like that. So at the time, my credit score is still great, but at the time I was really hyper focused on having a really high credit score and access to a lot of credit. Mm-hmm. So while I was like, oh, I need to buy a place, at the same time I was looking into buying a place here, I had a friend who was like, have you considered out of state investing? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I don't know anyone. Like, why would I do that? So, and I started looking into it. I was like, maybe. I mean, it's an option. Like, people do it all the time. So, why can't I do it? So I joined a Facebook group.
And does that Facebook group still exist?
It does.
What's it called?
I don't want to shout it out.
Don't want to shout it out.
I don't want to shout it out.
Okay.
But there are other Facebook groups like that.
Okay.
So I joined this Facebook group and it was people from all over the country who were investing in out-of-state markets. And so I started learning how to evaluate an out-of-state market.
Let's talk about that. How do you evaluate a project in an out-of-state market? Because I'll be honest, Nika and I are looking at a lot of out-of-state investments right now, and I think what you have to say could be very relevant to our search.
Right, so you need to look at the growth in the area. You need to start really understanding the area because it's not going to be like where you live, right? And you have to figure out what your comfort level is, because you too may want to invest in a place where, like, for example, you know me. We'll invest in St. Louis because we know that Shalon's there. And if something goes down, she can go take a look at our property. Some people may not care about that. It's like, if I have a good property manager in that area, I don't care if I have a family member or friend who's there, right? So you need to see what you're comfortable with. Are you gonna actually wanna go visit the property, or are you going to like delegate someone to go visit the property? You wanna like understand the demographics, you wanna understand the growth, you wanna understand like,
and by demographics, you mostly mean economic demographics,
yes, economic.
Right? Like, how are jobs? What's right, happening with the economy there? Yeah,
cost of living and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So you want somewhere that's affordable. So I looked at a bunch of different markets, right? I looked at like Philadelphia, I looked at St. Louis, I looked at Atlanta, I looked at a lot of different areas, and actually was really strongly considering Philadelphia the weekend that I met my husband, which is kind of funny. I actually was going on a trip that weekend to go check out the market because of people I met in that group.
Okay.
And so we all were from different places and decided that we were going to plan a weekend trip and just like go look at properties.
Nice.
And so that's how that was like one of my biggest tips, to surround yourself with people who are also doing the same thing. Right. So
if you're not shouting that Facebook group out, would you be able to recommend a place where people are doing that now that our audience could tap into?
Let me think about it and I can. Okay. We can add it to the resources.
I can say one place that I've looked to as a resource for finding out like what's happening is Bigger Pockets. I love Bigger Pockets.
That was when I was first getting started. I was working in LA and living in Corona. So long commutes.
Wow.
And so I would listen to Bigger Pockets podcasts on my way to work, mm-hmm. and on my way back for months. That was all I listened to. So that is, yeah. that is a really, really great resource.
It's a great podcast because they interview people, you know, like Shalon, who are doing like, you know, they're doing the work. They're like finding creative ways to invest, building portfolios, and they're telling you how they did it. And it's all unique. It's so unique. Everyone's route is different. But then also they have the blog, like the forum. You know, so it's like searchable and it's yes. easily searchable.
Okay, very good.
Yes, good. That's a really, really great resource.
Okay, so did you take the trip or you met the husband and canceled the trip?
No, I took the trip. And this is another lesson in just do it, right? Like, I think a lot of people, they do a lot of research, you get analysis paralysis. And I'm like the opposite of that. It's like, if I want it, I'm going to go after it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm the same.
I'm the analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm like, I'm going to do this. So we met in this Facebook group and it was like, these people were just people who like commented on people's posts. I figured out who were the movers and shakers, who were actually buying property, who actually knew what they were talking about, and like DM'd these people. We became friends and then decided, hey, let's plan a weekend trip and we'll rent a party bus. And we'll get a lender and a real estate agent and all this stuff. And we'll literally take the party bus and go look at properties. And some people may buy properties and some people may not, but it's going to be a learning experience for all of us, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. we literally just like put together this
little investing group.
Yeah, just.
I love it.
Just on the party bus.
I love it.
With random people you meet on the internet that you've never met before, right?
Sounds safe.
The party bus is the best part to me right now. That is the key.
Yes. It was actually so much fun. But so the reason I said just do it is that Friday was when I was going to fly out to spend the weekend. On that Thursday, so the day before, and mind you, I'm still living in Corona, I don't want to drive out to LA on Thursday night and then go back home and drive back to LA on Friday for my weekend trip. So someone I met online as well posted on Facebook, hey, I'm in LA, you know, and I was like, oh, this person's in my city. This is someone who I've been in contact with. So all I said was, oh, have fun in my city. And she's like, are you here? Like, let's get together tonight for drinks. And I was like, I'm flying out tomorrow. I don't want to drive out to LA just for drinks, and then I have to be at the airport early tomorrow morning.
Right.
And then I said, you know what, Shalon? Go.
Right. Like, just do it.
You're going to learn from this person. This person's in a real estate market that you want to learn about. Just go. So I booked a hotel, packed all my stuff up, and drove out the night before instead of on Friday morning, met up with this person and my husband who, you know, it was like the night before I left. So I told him what I was doing for the weekend, and you know, that night we talked about what my 5-year plan was and what my goals in real estate were. They told me what they were doing in real estate. And
so the husband was a friend of this person that was in the online group. Okay. Right. Got it.
So yeah. I didn't even know he was going to show up.
Right.
It was,
right.
I was introduced to him by the other person. And if I had not gone that night, I would have gone to Pennsylvania and I would have probably started investing there. And that weekend, I did see a property that I wanted to buy, and I ran it by him. I was like, hey, found this place. It's a great deal. It's like $16,000. And he was like, I don't like this. I don't like this. I don't like this. And it was going to be with my friend. So I was going to, it was like $8,000 each person.
I was going to say, so $8,000, was that the lowest that you've ever put into a property?
Well, I didn't. I ended up not buying it.
You ended up not buying it. But is that the lowest amount that we're going to put in?
Yeah, it was just like, I mean, both of us, we were both like, oh my gosh, we just put $8,000 each we could buy this property, we can share it.
Was the property $16,000?
The property was $16,000.
But it was in a terrible part of
town. It was in a terrible part of town. It was kind of rural. The rent, it was a little rural.
Oh, rural?
Yeah, it was a little rural. We drove outside of...
Okay, outside of Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
gotcha. It wasn't, like, in the city.
Okay, gotcha.
And so we...
I wonder what it's worth today. Have you Googled it?
I have not.
Oh, my God, and you it should was so all, do that.
It was also, like, the rent was, like, $500 a month. Right? It was just... It would have been comparable, right? We would have got made our money. Right. But there were so many repairs to be done and all this stuff. And so he was like, no, it just kind of sounds like a lot for where it is. And your access to it, you're not going to go out there. And so I ended up passing on it. But, and I don't know what would have happened if I had bought the house. I probably would have bought it. Probably would have been fine. But my connection that I made with him the night before.
Changed your life.
Changed. I didn't end up investing there. I ended up.
Right. You know. So now when we talk about that journey and how it's kind of shifted, because it has shifted.
Yeah.
You have a firm now, which is basically doing more of these projects, right? So can you explain how it's working now and who is able to contribute to your projects?
So we have a variety of different projects, and it's kind of evolved over the years. And something that Tyler and I are really good at is just kind of...
Tyler's the husband,
yeah. It's pivoting, right? Like, we have goals, and then the market's shifting, and... things are changing, and we're just like, okay, we'll go this
change
way,
right?
It, right. So, like, when we first met, he was doing a lot of wholesaling, right? So a lot of, the majority of his projects were wholesaling. And his niche is, like, portfolios. So portfolios of properties, not just, like,
not
one or
one.
Two. No.
I'm going to sell you five properties in a particular area. Okay.
Or, like, maybe you've been investing for years and years, and you have 25 properties, and you want to offload them, and then maybe Dominic wants to buy two, and I want to buy two, and someone else wants to buy two, so then he splits up the portfolio and sells them off to different people, right? Huh. That's what he was doing a lot of, like wholesaling.
Okay.
It wasn't like a lot of buy and hold, it wasn't a lot of flipping, it was like primarily wholesaling, like buying from one portfolio and selling them either the whole portfolio.
Like cutting it up or selling the whole portfolio.
Yeah. Or sometimes like, okay, we got 25, let's keep two of them and then sell off 23 of them.
Right.
Right. So it was a lot of wholesaling, and then that kind of moved into flips.
Okay.
So
again, are we in St. Louis with these properties? All exclusively of... now. So you picked a place and you kind of like...
Yes.
Have you bought anything anywhere else other than St. Louis?
Our portfolio is all in St. Louis.
All in St. Louis. Yeah. So you found what works and you just kind of stuck to it.
And over the years, we've kind of shifted the price points as well, right? Because the first house I bought in the St. Louis area was $37,500, right? That was like the price point. And, you know, like our last flip was like over $700,000, right?
Okay.
So it's like... We've worked our way up, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, and it's been like a decade, right? Like, you've been doing this for how long?
Well, no, 5 years.
Only 5 years?
Yeah, it's been
5 years. 2017. That's what you said. God, it feels like longer than that.
So, and then also, we still have projects that are also, like, less than $100,000. And so it's a variety.
Okay, so say I come to you, because this is the part that fascinates me, and I know we've done events together before, for example, where you shared this, and I find it so fascinating. If I said to you, I have $10,000, can you do something with that?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think now the price points are probably a little bit higher.
Okay, what would be the minimum amount I could invest right now with your firm?
I think probably like 25.
Okay, so I have $25,000. What do you do with it?
Well, you would then be a private lender. Mm-hmm. We would use the funds to have to run a project or a part of a project or contribute to it. And you would get like a flat rate return on that investment.
So I get paid interest.
Right.
So what is, you know, I know what my high yield savings account is. What kind of interest would I get investing it with your firm?
Well, it depends on the investor. Like, I think.
Me.
10%.
Okay. Yeah. That's double the amount of my high yield savings account. How soon would I see the return?
It could be like 3 months.
It could be 3 months?
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be 3 months.
If it's a easy flip, yeah.
Okay. What's the longest it would take for you to get your money back?
It could be a year. I mean, we've had massive flip projects that have taken a year.
And do you pay your private lenders?
Private lenders.
Do you pay them monthly? Do you pay them at the end of the project?
At the end of the project.
At the end of the project. Got it. So it's out of pocket. That's the risk. Okay. The return comes at the end of the project. And so is your firm constantly just buying projects, improving them, and selling them?
Constantly.
And you deal with doors? Like, you're dealing with multi-families mostly?
We're doing single family.
Okay.
It's all single family.
Is there a reason for that?
It's just kind of where the opportunity is right now.
Right.
We're not opposed to multifamily at all.
Because you used to do multifamilies, right?
Yeah, so we've had like duplexes, and you know, one of our flips was a duplex. So we're open to wherever the deal is.
Right.
If the numbers make sense, we'll do it.
Okay.
So
what is, just out of curiosity, if you would be willing to share, what is the minimum like profitability of a project that could work for you? Like, say in St. Louis, Missouri, you talked about a $700,000 flip. That was the resale price, or the
acquisition? That was the resale price.
So what was it? What did you acquire it for?
Two something. Wait, hold on. Let me see if I remember the exact. I probably 238.
Okay, I won't hold you to it.
Yeah.
238.
Let's say about around 240.
And so 240, and you're buying it in cash with the money from the private lenders, right? Which can be an assortment of different lenders. How much did you invest in the rehab?
Probably about 250.
Okay. And then the cost of selling in St. Louis, like transfer taxes, commissions, and everything.
So Tyler's a realtor.
So you don't have to pay commission
To his side.
Do you pay the buyer's agent?
Mm-hmm.
You do. So you list it on the MLS, like a regular property?
Yep.
Okay, great. And then is there a transfer tax and that kind of thing?
The commission is like 2.5%.
Right.
So and then...
And then taxes are
just like the
fees?
The title fees and all of that. Yeah.
How much? 1%? 1.5%?
Probably about that, yeah.
Okay, so like 4%. So, and you did that in 3 months?
No. That was the one that was like over a year.
That was over a year.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Got it. Okay. And so the overall, as you're like going through, now we have this high interest rate market. I don't know what the environment's like in St. Louis, but is it hitting the city at all? Are things slowing down?
It is, but I mean, the market isn't going anywhere, right? So I know people are really scared, like, oh, I'm waiting for the prices to come down.
Right.
They're not coming down.
Right.
I mean, you know this.
Yeah,
right?
I do. I know that.
So most people don't. They're just like holding off to buy.
Right. I mean, my philosophy is buy what you can, where you can, when you can. And it will always go up over time.
Yeah.
Even if the cycle goes, it will go back up. You just hang on.
It's like there's never a bad time to buy,
only
a bad time to sell.
Girl, words spoken out of my very own mouth. So let's go back to evaluating a deal.
Okay.
Like, do you pay a return based on like high, medium, and low risk investments, like some investment accounts are?
No, not really. And I think, so when we're evaluating different ways for different deals, right? If we're trying to do a buy and hold, we're evaluating it differently than if we're doing a flip, than if we're just like wholesaling it, right? We're using different metrics.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people who are our private lenders are usually... because they know that their money is secured by real estate, right?
So let's talk about that though. What is the risk to a private lender? If you say it's secured by real estate, do I get a lien on the property? Or like,
you get to foreclose on the property if we don't perform.
So it is recorded.
It is, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
We don't play around.
I love that. But what moves you in it? What is your ultimate like end goal mission? Like, why this?
Because for me personally, I really want to have people learn how to make their money make money for them, right? So I didn't grow up with money. I don't come from a family with money. And, you know, like you said earlier, we think of investing as something that people do that have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to know that you don't have to have a lot of money to invest, right? And even if you don't want to get into real estate and you don't want to like have rentals or anything like that, and you want to be a private lender and make money on your money, you can also do that,
mm-hmm.
right? So for me, the motivating factor is really getting the word out that you can make money on your money, like with real estate. Whether you're a private lender, whether you're like buying a rental, whether you're flipping, wholesaling, whatever it is that you're doing in real estate.
I love that. You know, that aligns obviously with our mission as well. You know, not everybody comes from rich parents, and
right.
we're not all taught how to do this, for the love of God. We have to like figure it out and align with other people who we can get wealth of knowledge from so we can learn how to apply it. Have you looked at any other markets now? Now that you've done St. Louis, you've got St. Louis in the bag, like where should we be looking other than St. Louis to invest, do you think?
So it's really up to people's risk tolerance.
Say
right?
we like, have so a high risk tolerance.
You have a...
I have a high risk tolerance. She has a low risk tolerance, so probably we should do medium to high risk.
So, I mean, I have a really, really high risk
Your
tolerance.
High, yeah.
yeah. And I'm not... Fortunately or unfortunately, my husband also has a high risk tolerance. So
okay. So you guys put all your chips in.
Yeah, we do. We do put all our chips in because we're betting on us.
Yeah.
Like, I'll bet on me.
Yeah.
All day long.
Me too.
So I think you have to research the market, right? And look at the growth and all of that. So similar markets to St. Louis, right? There's also like the Sun Belt states.
What are the Sun Belt states?
We've like looked into like Florida. We've looked into Ohio.
I'm hearing a lot about Ohio.
Yeah. There are a lot of markets within Ohio.
Right.
As well. So I think, okay. So without geographically where we're looking, mm-hmm. we're looking for landlord friendly states. That's
right.
the very top of the list for me.
Yeah.
Because
the laws keep changing, don't they?
They do keep changing. And like, for example, if you need to evict someone in California.
It's impossible.
I don't know how long it takes.
Our city is handing out crack pipes to people with
it's
our tax dollars.
It's literally impossible in some cases.
Let alone evicting people who are not.
Do you know
immigrants.
How long it takes in St. Louis to evict someone?
How long?
45 days. That would be like the max.
And that's for non-payment of rent only.
Yeah. Right. Like they would, you will have a sheriff show up at your door to escort you out.
Right.
Like it's not, they're not playing. So
yeah, they don't mess around in Florida either, I think.
Right. So you have to, that would be the top of my list.
Right.
Like a landlord-friendly state mm-hmm. if you're looking for rental properties.
Right.
Yeah.
What about flips? Have you done research on emerging like markets or places where flips are performing really well, where you can still do a $200,000 acquisition and sell for seven?
I think that's almost like any market if you
think so?
Know if you know the market well, right? Like I think that anyone could be successful in any market if they know the market, right? I'm sure that there are people who could come to the St. Louis market and not be successful,
right?
Because even though the prices are right and it's a great market for rentals, for flips, for all of that, but if you don't know the market, then you're not gonna be successful. So for example, St. Louis is very pocketed, right? You could have a $40,000 house on a street and, not exaggerating, two blocks over on the other side of the street, you could have a house for like $400,000.
Wow.
Like
two blocks.
Two blocks on the other side of the street.
So if it was like that, would you buy the $40,000 house?
Well, it depends on what you're doing with it.
If you're gonna flip it?
We would. We have.
Do people care about design in St. Louis?
Not like they do in LA.
Okay. And so that makes your renovations a little bit more cost effective.
Yes.
Right. So that's a big piece of what we do here, obviously, is we have to coach our clients on how to choose the right level of fit and finish for the price point they're trying to achieve. Because you can easily over improve a house here, or, sad to say, dramatically under-improve
it. Which is more frequent.
And, you know, people were getting away with it in the previous market. They're not getting away with it now.
So a lot of investors
are frustrated.
The quality of the finishes have to be there, right? So for our house that we just finished, that was, you know, in the $700,000 range, we used really high-end finishes, right? Like, that's expected, that market... that neighborhood calls for it.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't have done a mediocre flip and made that money. There's no way, right?
Okay, got it.
So the quality of the products that we're putting in a flip that's like 150 all in is not the same as one that's like
of course
you know, $500 all in.
Right.
So you do have to make sure that the quality of the products are great. But in terms of like design, I feel like LA is just
snobbier than that.
It's in a different category.
Yeah.
So for...
But who does your design?
So for our last one, Tyler and I did the design, right?
Okay.
So, which is a... Which
it's a lot. Doesn't it take a lot of time?
It takes a lot of time and a lot of effort. But what I'm going to say is we felt comfortable doing it in the St. Louis market.
Right.
If I had a flip that was the same caliber in the LA market, I probably would hire a designer.
Right.
Because I wouldn't be confident that I would...
be able to do it right.
And that's just the truth. I wouldn't be confident in my design ability.
Yeah, so in my a market point like in, Los in Angeles. These questions is just to try and figure out if we're evaluating, like we're looking at possibly taking, because, you know, on a $250,000 acquisition price, it's like 10% is $22,500. You know, we can do that and improve it. And it's, you know, it just feels like more affordable. But what do we need to think of? So we need to think about jobs. We need to think about like growth, rent, the rents, obviously. Yep. What rent site do you use to evaluate rents? Do you use a site?
I don't know what Tyler uses.
Okay.
He does all that.
Okay. Tyler, if you're listening, post a comment and let us know what site you're using to evaluate the long-term rents on a property. Because you're mostly doing long-term for the rentals, right? Like not short-term.
Yes.
Yep. And then also like with design expectations, I mean, I think I know it cuts into a huge part of our budget for our clients here in LA. So how affordable is the renovation? How do you find, like when you were starting in St. Louis, Tyler was already there?
He was already there.
He already had his network of contractors and stuff.
Yes.
So you didn't have to search for any of that. It was like,
we went through years of shenanigans with contractors. Mm-hmm. So we have gone through cycles of horrible contractors who took our money and didn't perform. I mean, we've gone through all of that.
How do you avoid that risk now? Like, what are the risks?
So we have our own crew now. So
like you employ them?
Or you sub?
Well,
you reach out to subs. No,
we don't employ them, but they're-
You use them all the time.
We exclusively use them.
Okay, got it. Got it.
But it's like our crew, they're moving from
your project right, to your project to your project.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So what would you say like people should look out for? What are red flags that we should be looking out for in our out-of-state investment kind of mind?
So red flag for like a contractor is if you have to pay a lot of money upfront instead of... So what you want to do is to have a solid contract that says, this is a down payment. When you finish this amount of work, you get this much money released to you. This amount of work, you get this much released to you. That's the best way to do it.
So you made a mistake there with that?
We may have made a mistake or two.
I made one too. That's why I'm saying it happens. It happens for real.
Yeah, you want to make sure that the expectations are clear, because they could finish the job and then say, oh, well, this was not on the scope of work. And if you just had a verbal agreement, then you have to pay them, right? So I think you definitely want to outline, when these five items are done, this is the amount of money that will be disbursed. When these five items are done, this is the amount of money that will be disbursed. So I think that would really help. Getting reviews from past customers, but that's going to be hard with contractors.
Yeah, because they only give you the good ones.
Right. So I think you have to see the quality of their work as well, right? That's also sometimes a hard one, because they could say, oh yeah, I can do that. Or the permitting issues, if they may know how to do something, but they are not licensed to do it. So you need to know the permitting rules in your jurisdiction, right? Because in St. Louis, like there's St. Louis City, there's St. Louis County. There's like, we're in St. Charles County. So depending on the county or the city, there could be different rules about permitting.
Right. And right. So what needs to be permitted?
So your contractor needs to be aware of the permitting rules in that area.
What other red flags for a person just looking, like if we're looking at property, it looks like good. For example, I have my eye on this property. Okay. It appeals to me because it's got design sensibility.
Okay.
Okay. It could be a bed and breakfast. It could be doors, like, you know, six studio apartments or something. It's an old Victorian kind of a thing.
Okay.
In order for it to be its highest and best use is probably bed and breakfast.
Okay.
Which would mean I need to put somebody in there to manage that.
Yeah.
Which is going to eat into the profit, I'm sure. But I'm like, how do I know if this is worth putting my money into or not? Because it seems like an opportunity because the acquisition price is pretty low.
But you have to evaluate it as the business, right? The potential business, not as just the real estate. Because like...
Right, the real estate, if I do what I want to it, I know the real estate itself is a no-brainer. It will appreciate, you know, it will be more valuable after I touch it. I know that.
Right,
okay. Like just from a basic real estate point of view. But as far as like what it gets turned into, it's like highest and best use as a property is probably not a single family home. It's probably not.
Right.
So it's probably a business.
But you can't evaluate it as if you would for a single family home. So if you said, oh, if I bought a rental in this area, I wanted to make this much money or this percent return on my investment.
What percent return? Right? Percent return though would you say if you were buying something that was going to be an investment property like for you? What's the minimum return on investment that you would go for?
Minimum return on investment. Like per door?
Sure.
Per door per month, I would say no less than $300 per door per month.
Okay. That seems easily attainable.
It's very easily attainable, especially in a market like St. Louis.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Other than overpaying your contractors up front, what should we be looking out for?
Oh, another thing is that you could do is you could offer them an incentive if they finish on time, which it's really hard for them to finish on time sometimes. Mm-hmm. So if you say, if you finish on time, there is a bonus in it for you, right? Mm-hmm. So that's also a way to get them to kind of like stay
perform.
On track.
What kind of bonus do you offer?
It depends. You could just say like, depends on the cost of the project, but you could say, if you guys finish on time, we'll throw in an extra $2,000, okay. Right? Yeah. So that's a good incentive. Yeah.
Finishing on time?
Because if
a little hustle in their step?
Yeah.
Have you ever partner shared with a contractor?
No.
You wouldn't do that?
I don't know if we wouldn't do that. It would depend on who it is.
Okay.
But we haven't found a contractor that we would.
There are people, a lot of people who do that here in LA, like the contractor's part of the project. I've seen that go wrong too, though.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah.
See, I'm open to anything. Because you have to be creative with the deals. You have to be creative.
Yeah.
So you have to be open to everything.
It's a full-time job, no? Like constantly evaluating these deals and looking. You're always hunting. Are you always hunting?
Always hunting. You're always looking for money and deals and contractors.
Yeah.
Those are the three things.
Yeah.
That you're always looking for, right? Even though we have our own crew, like we're always looking. always looking.
So I want to get back to the red flags thing because I feel like there have to be some more lessons learned in the years that you've been doing this. So tell us some other like lessons learned that our audience can learn from.
I would say our biggest mistakes have been when we trust too much and we don't put everything in writing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's good advice.
That is, but that's like for everything. Right?
Totally.
It's just, you have a discussion, you're building rapport with someone, you trust them, and you trust that they're gonna follow through on their word, and they don't.
Right.
So you have to have it in writing so that you could take legal action if you need to.
Have you sued anybody?
We have. Yeah.
And won?
Yes.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you. Yeah, because I guess if you're in this business long enough, you're going to find yourself in some situations. And, you know, I have the situation with this contractor that, you know, basically stole money.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like there are so many barriers, like so many hoops you have to jump through in order to get anything done. So many excuses, so many whatever. And, you know, that definitely feels like sage advice to protect your money carefully, let it out little by tiny little. Incentivize a performance and make sure that your milestones are in writing and signed by both parties. Yes, that all sounds like very good advice. How can our audience find you if they want to learn more or become a private lender?
So I'm not very active on Instagram, but my Instagram handle is shells517.
Shells517, yes. On Instagram.
And okay. I can put like our business contact information in the...
Perfect. Yep. Does it have a website?
Yeah. So it's simplesolutionhomebuyer.com.
Simplesolutionhomebuyer.com.
That's easy.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you feel like people would love to know?
I think my best advice for someone who's like interested in entering into real estate and they don't know anything is to like educate yourself and to really surround yourself with like-minded people, because that's what's helped me be the most successful. Because even you could, you know, be on Bigger Pockets and like learn all this information, but if you're kind of by yourself in a vacuum and you're not applying it with anyone, or you're not bouncing ideas off of anyone, or you're not getting any information from like people who are actually doing it, then you're not gonna have the incentive to like move forward. So I would say just take action, be assertive, and surround yourself with like-minded people.
Very good advice. Thank you so, so much for joining us. And it's so good to see your face.
This was so great to be here.
Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time on Under All Is the Land. Bye. Under All Is the Land.